Wednesday, January 21st. Memorial of St. Agnes, Virgin and Martyr. The first reading from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 32 and 33, 37, and 40 through 51. David spoke to Saul, "Let your majesty not lose courage. I am at your service to go and fight this Philistine." But Saul answered David, "You cannot go up against this Philistine and fight with him, for you are only a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth." David continued, "The Lord who delivered me from the claws of the lion and the bear will also keep me safe from the clutches of this Philistine." Saul answered David, "Go, the Lord will be with you." Then, staff in hand, David selected 5 smooth stones from the wadi and put them in the pocket of his shepherd's bag. With his sling also ready to hand, he approached the Philistine. With his shield-bearer marching before him, the Philistine also advanced closer and closer to David. When he had sized David up and seen that he was youthful and ruddy and handsome in appearance, the Philistine held David in contempt. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come against me with a staff?" Then the Philistine cursed David by his gods and said to him, "Come here to me, and I will leave your flesh for the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." David answered him, "You come against me with sword and spear and scimitar, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel that you have insulted. Today the Lord shall deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will leave your corpse and the corpses of the Philistine army for the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Thus the whole land shall learn that Israel has a God. All this multitude too shall learn that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he shall deliver you into our hands." The Philistine then moved to meet David at close quarters, while David ran quickly toward the battle line in the direction of the Philistine. David put his hand into the bag and took out a stone, hurled it with the sling, and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone embedded itself in his brow, and he fell prostrate on the ground. Thus David overcame the Philistine with sling and stone. He struck the Philistine mortally and did it without a sword. Then David ran and stood over him. With the Philistine's own sword, which he drew from its sheath, he dispatched him and cut off his head. Haydock Commentary. David was but a youth when compared with the giant or Saul, though David might be about 22 years old or near 30. St. Augustine says he is only 14 or 16 at this time. He had not yet been in the wars. Some infer from these verses that David seems to have just come from the flock. But others say that slingers were of great service in the army, and the bag that David had might well be used to obtain the stones, as the staff denotes a military weapon. David was very expert in using these weapons, and the ordinary armor was encumbering to him. Valor depends more on its own efforts than on armor. So says St. Ambrose. The beauty of David made the rough warrior suppose that he was not coming to fight, but only to laugh at him and run away. Homer frequently describes his champions making long speeches in praise of their former exploits. David displays his piety and confidence in God. Some suppose that David hit Goliath's eye, which was not covered with brass. But the stone might penetrate or kill Goliath through his helmet. Even a buckler is not capable of withstanding their violence. Pride sits on the forehead and manifests itself by impudent behavior. We must destroy it by humility and by the cross of Christ. So says St. Augustine. The Gospel from Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Jesus entered the synagogue. There was a man there who had a withered hand. They watched Jesus closely to see if he would cure him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, "Come up here before us." Then he said to the Pharisees, "Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath rather than to do evil? To save life rather than to destroy it?" But they remained silent. Looking around at them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart, Jesus said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately took counsel with the Herodians against him to put him to death. From the Great Commentary of Cornelius a Lapide. With reference to healing this maimed person, the scribes had proposed a doubt or scruple: is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Christ resolved this doubt by means of another question, not dubious but plain: is it lawful to do well on the Sabbath or to do evil, to save a soul or to destroy it? The meaning is, if anyone should not succor or do a kindness to one who is sick or heavily afflicted, like this maimed man, on the Sabbath, when he is able to do it, as I, Christ, am able, he does him an injury, for he refuses him the help which is due to him by the law of love. In a similar sense, St. Augustine says, if thou hast not fed the hungry, thou hast killed him, because thou hast allowed him to die of hunger. In like manner, if thou hast not delivered him who was about to be killed by a robber, when thou mightest have done so, thou hast slain him, for his death will be reckoned to thee by God for guilt and punishment in exactly the same manner as if thou hadst killed him thyself. Christ therefore signifies that not to do good on the Sabbath to a sick person when thou art able is to do him evil. But it is never lawful to do evil. Therefore it is always lawful to do good to such persons, even on the Sabbath. For the Sabbath is devoted to God and good works. And thus it is a more grievous sin to do evil on the Sabbath than upon other days. For by this means the sanctity of the Sabbath is violated, even as by doing good upon it, it is the better kept and hallowed. Christ was angry at their unbelief, and showed by his countenance that he was enraged with the blind and obstinate and perverse minds of the scribes, in that they ascribed Christ's miracles of goodness, which he wrought upon the Sabbath, to a breach of the law enjoining the observance of the day. From hence it is plain that there was in Christ real anger, sorrow, and the rest of the passions and affections as they exist in other men, only subject to reason. Wherefore anger was in him a whetstone of virtue. Anger is in us a passion. In Christ it was, as it were, an action. It arises spontaneously in us. By Christ it was stirred up in himself. When it has arisen in us, it disturbs the other faculties of the body and mind, nor can it be repressed at our own pleasure. But when stirred up in Christ, it acts as he wills it to act. It disturbs nothing. It ceases when he wills it to cease. St. Leo says, the bodily senses were vigorous in Christ without the law of sin, and the reality of his affections was governed by his soul and divinity. Lactantius says, anger is the lust of punishing him by whom you think yourself to have been injured. Wherefore anger in other men springs from self-love, but in Christ it sprang from love of God, because he loved God perfectly. Hence he was infinitely grieved and angry at offenses against God by reason of sin, wishing to compensate for those offenses by punishing or correcting sinners and unbelievers. Wherefore Christ's anger was zeal, or seasoned with zeal, even as in the angels and the blessed, it is not anger but zeal. So says St. Thomas Aquinas. The anger of Jesus did not proceed from the desire of vengeance, but was mingled with pity, and Jesus was angry with sin, but sorry for sinners, inasmuch as he loved them and strove to save them. All such anger is mingled with sorrow, for he that is angry grieves for the evil at which he is angry. Thus the sorrow for the evil causes and sharpens anger, that it may strive to remove the evil at which it is grieved.